Yes, Dick Benchley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with June Whitfield, Alma Toga, Wallace Hinton, and the Keynotes, all inviting you to...
Jim, let me explain it again. This newspaper is running a competition.
Yes.
Whoever wins gets a night out with any famous BBC star. You get the angle now?
Yeah, I get it, yes.
Some poor, scruffy little unknown nobody is taken out by a real star. And that's me.
Well, congratulations. Where are you being taken?
I'm the star.
Oh, you're the... Oh,
yes, you said it. Yes. You see, the girl who won, she chose me. Where it said, what star do you choose for your evening of glamour, she put anyone but Dick Bentley, if possible.
Yes. Of course, that could leave anyone but Dick Bentley, if possible.
Jimmy, if you insist on this catty attitude, I shall tell television viewers what the rest of your house looks like. Yes. Jimmy, I'm going to give this girl an evening to remember. Something she can tell her grandchildren about.
You didn't mention she was a grandmother.
She's not. She's not a grandmother. No. Ask Elmer. All I know about her is her name is Evelyn Coggins, unmarried, age 39, and works in Potter's Bar.
And Potter's let her off for the evening, I think.
Don't be so dim. It's early closing day.
Oh.
Jim, I've mapped this whole thing out. We'll start in a smart little restaurant in Soho, La Café de Harry. They do you well there.
Yeah, they've done me a couple of times. Bendy, you mustn't forget that this girl won't be used to this sort of opulence, you know. You'll have to put her at her ease.
Oh, I shall be very relaxed and charming with her. Light banter over the cocktails, equipped with the grapefruit. Pull her leg through the soup.
That should warm her up. You ever call a minestrone?
Yes. You haven't got any more of those, have you? Thank goodness. Then with the later courses, I'll start, you know, piling on the romantic stuff a bit. Nothing unseemly, of course. Just a spot of footy-wooty during the tutti-frutti. Can you picture her feeling?
Only too vividly, as the poor wee mite.
Well, she might and she might not. Oh, but what an evening I'm going to give her. The newspaper's sending a man along any minute now to finalize the details.
Mr. Bentley?
Yes?
Excuse me. The Evening Sentinel sent me here just to know if everything's laid on for tonight.
You may tell your readers that Dick Bentley's romantic charm is switched on to maximum boost.
Oh,
quote, Evelyn Coggins will go back to Potter's Bar with a memory time can never efface.
Well, that's very kind of you. I'm really most appreciative.
Not at all.
Now bring on the lucky little lady.
What lucky little lady?
The prize winner.
Oh, I'm the prize winner.
Hey,
no, yes, sir. Evelyn Coggins of Potter's Bar.
Oh, no.
Oh, Bentley, your footy-wooty is up the creaky-weaky. Oh.
Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier. Davy Crockett, the buckskin buccaneer. All round the mountains of the Tennessee, green estate in the land of the free, raised in the woods so he knew every tree, killed him a bear when he was only three. Davy Crockett, the wild frontier. Davy Crockett, the buckskin buckaroo. He fought single-handed through the Indian war, till the priest was whipped and peace was restored. And while the peace was hanging, this risky job made himself a legend forevermore. Davy,
king of the wild frontier.
Now you
his country's call.
Davy, Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier. He went up to Congress and served his battle, mixing up the government and laws as well. Took over Washington, so we hear tell, and patched up the crack in the Liberty Bell.
Thank you, Keynotes. And so to the Glums.
Oh, Ron. What are you holding a ruler on top of your head for?
I'm trying to measure how tall my hair is, eh?
Measure how tall?
It's for my new diary, eh? The personal particulars page. It says, colour of hair, dot, 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 height.
Dear, it's not height of your hair, sweetheart. All of you. Oh, Ron, I never knew you kept a diary. Oh, fancy you not ever mentioning it. Oh, Ron, sometimes I wonder how deep you really are.
I don't know, eh? I don't even know how high I am.
You keeping a diary? Oh, I can't get over it. Just what's behind it, Ron?
A little pencil, eh? Look, it's got a teeny brass top hat on it.
Oh, so it has. Oh, do let's see your diary, Ron.
No, Ed, no, it's private. It contains my innermost thoughts.
But the pages are blank, Ron.
Well, I haven't thought this year yet.
But that's wasting the diary, sweetheart. Oh, I know. Why don't you use it to jot down all your little daily doings?
Oh, I never thought of jotting those down, Ed.
That's what a diary's for, dear heart. Now, what did you do this morning?
Went out.
Yes, and then?
Come in again.
Why?
Caught the belt of me Mac in the door.
Well, that's all part of the daily adventure of living, Ron. You jot it down, and then for the evening you can write that I came round, and I was wearing my blue.
Blue.
U-E.
U-E.
And then we sat on the sofa together, and, oh, well, you can carry on from there.
Right, are we?
No, I didn't mean that, Ron.
Go on, Ed, just give me something to note in me diary.
Oh, no, Ron, I don't. Like
go on,
if
just a kiss.
Oh, Ron,
it's
hello, hello, hello. Oh, Ron, and I thought you'd made a resolution to give that up.
Give what up, Mr. Glum?
Wearing his cap in the arse. You see, Eph, we've all made resolutions this year, all of us. Mm-hmm. It was as a consequence of a remark what was passed last week.
Oh.
A certain party said that in the Glum family there's too much boozing and swearing and knocking the old woman about. Therefore, we have resolved to forego these simple pleasures.
If you're referring to me, Mr. Glum, I didn't say that in as many
perhaps
words.
Perhaps you didn't actually say it, but you intimidated it. And, well, it makes me feel ashamed of my coarseness.
Oh, but, Mr. Glum, I never meant
to. May I? May I, my dear? Just a few more words. I resolved that in future the Glum's name would be a byword for quiet gentility and good manners and,
Oh, Mr. Glum, you
oh,
shouldn't...
Oh, Lummy, if you don't shut your gob, I'll shut it for you. The word that I was groping for is charm. We Glums have changed it. No out to the pub for me this morning. In the coal shed from 9 to 1, being useful. That was me.
Oh, Mr. Glum, it's like a miracle.
And I swear to you, Eth, there's not a drop of alcoholic liquor anywhere in the arse. Is there, Ron?
No, Dad, it's in the coal shed.
You speak where you're spoken to.
Oh, Dad, goodness.
What's more, Eth? In order to avoid the insinuations of foul language often flung at my dear ones, I've instituted a family swear box.
Swear box?
Yes. If any of us utters a foul word, either in anger or at ordinary meal times, he or she has to place a penny in the box. This box here. An ordinary cocoa tin with a slot cut in the top. By the simple process of me holding a chisel and my son hitting it with an hammer. See it?
But there's about a shilling's worth in it already.
I missed the chisel, eh?
Well, a penny for every swear word, Mr. Glum. What will you do with the money? Buy national savings?
National savings? Not likely. We're all going to have our holiday on it.
Oh, Clacton.
Clacton? Judging on our past form, we'll be able to afford Monte Carlo.
Oh, I think it's very wonderful of you, Mr. Glum. I really do. I'm really proud of you.
Are you? Not at all, Ev. It's funny, but somehow it's just as easy to be kind and considerate as it is to be honorable. Which reminds me. Mama! You're not... She heard me. You're not carrying that heavy tray loaded with china upstairs by yourself, are you? Oh, Mother, you silly girl. I do all the heavy carrying. Ah! Don't you carry it no further. Rest it on the banister. I'll come up as soon as I've finished this fag. Of course it'll be safe on the banisters.
Oh, dear. What's she saying, Mr. Glum?
Quieter. 1 and 4, 1 and 5, 1 and 6, 1 and 9, 2 and a penny, 2 and 8.
Some like the sweep of a graceful tango. They love to dip and to bend. I want to dance to a mambo combo. Why? It's the end.
Brandy's in soda, please. You see, Edwards, you know that nephew of mine, the one with the fringe? He's going in for law.
A very wise move, Your Grace. First time I saw him, I thought to myself, oh, law. But it is an interesting life, Your Grace. And a solicitor can be a great help to his client. Mm-hmm. In fact, one case springs to my mind immediately.
Oh, no chance it will spring out again.
Not on your distinguished Nelly. You sit and listen like everybody else has to. As a solicitor in a quiet market town, I don't have much to do with real crime. A bit of poaching now and again, occasional petty pilfering, spot of peeping tommery in Lover's Lane. But outside of that, I'm quite a respectable citizen. So you can imagine my perturbation when I was informed that my richest client, the lovely Mrs. Mannering, had shot her husband, the lovely Mr. Mannering. Hastily, I cycled over to the prison where she was being held pending trial.
It's like a horrible nightmare, Mr. Prendergast. For 3 weeks, they've cooped me up in this horrible cell. Cold stone walls, bars on the window.
I see. And what is the charge?
I don't know. I haven't had a bill yet. Mr. Prendergast, next week they're putting me on trial for murder.
Murder? Yes, of course. That's illegal now, isn't it?
Oh, Mr. Prendergast, you must brief a really outstanding barrister to conduct my defense.
The lawyer to have is Travers Whittaker. I can thoroughly recommend him.
Oh, but I've never heard of him.
But he talked about young barrister, you know. Remember that case where an ex-convict was found in the Bank of England vaults with his pockets full of gold bars? Well, incredible though it may seem, thanks to Whittaker, the fellow got off scot-free.
Whittaker was defending?
No, he was prosecuting. I asked him to come along to the Nick here for a preparatory talk. Tell me why he isn't here yet. Oh, wait a minute. I hear footsteps. Oh, no, it's a party of convicts being marched out to the exercise yard.
Come on, Al. No talking. You're in the back. But I tell you, there's been a dreadful mistake.
Oh, it's Whittaker. It's all right, Warder.
Oh, no, sir.
We're in here, Whittaker.
Oh, thank you, Prendergast. What a dreadful experience. I only tagged on because I thought he was a conducted tour of the prison. Oh, dear. Well, to work. Well, now, Prendergast, what are they charging you with this time?
No, it's not me. It's her.
Mr. Whittaker, they're saying I murdered my husband. I didn't do it. It's a lie. I'm innocent. I didn't murder him.
Oh, I see. Now, just tell me exactly what happened, and I will write it all down.
Well, that evening, my husband, he was in a vile mood. We'd been invited to the Gascoignes. You know the Gascoignes?
Of course. Bob and Penny.
As my husband was putting on his boiled shirt, I could hear him swearing. He couldn't find the hole for his back stud to go in. It had somehow healed up. Cursing, he lurched into my room for his service revolver. He was going to shoot himself a new aperture. I told him to put the gun away. He struck me. I struck him back. There was a struggle. We lurched to and fro, and suddenly there was a bang. He'd been shot in the melee.
Oh, how dreadfully painful. Well, Mrs. Mannering, you may safely leave your defense to me.
Oh, thank you.
Just one thing, if you don't mind, I'd like a word with your husband.
But he's dead.
Oh, I am sorry. When did it happen? When?
It'll be all right, Mrs. Mannering. Don't worry. I'll be behind him in the court. The day of Mrs. Mannering's trial, the courtroom was packed. The lawyer's benches were so crowded, I had some difficulty in finding a place to lean my bicycle. When the prosecuting counsel had finished his opening speech, the judge indicated our turn.
Counsel for the defense?
With respect, me lad, he's not here yet.
Not here, Mr. Prendergast. If you can't expect the court to sit around waiting, I suggest you do something.
Very good, me lad. I'd like to offer you a trombone solo. And I hope you'll all join in the second chorus. Sing or whistle.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, me lad. Right. Good morning, Mr. Prendergast. Sorry I'm late. I've been having me hair permed.
But you didn't have to do that.
But all the other lawyers...
Those are wigs. Come on, come on. They're all waiting for your opening speech.
All right, well, just let me get my raincoat off. There's a lot of people here, aren't there? I say, look over there. Isn't that that nice Mrs. Mannering? You know we met the other day? Hello, Mrs. Mannering.
Come to hear my speech.
She's a defendant, you fool.
Oh.
Now, come on, where's that opening speech I wrote out for you?
Oh, yeah. Look, can I have a conference?
Oh, dear. My lad, the learned counsel wishes to omit his opening speech. One, because our case is clearly non-absurdure, and two, because he used it to light the boiler with.
But if you have no opening speech, what have you thought of doing?
Blowing bubbles, my lad. It's the title of the trombone solo. I'm forever blowing bubbles. It'll pass the time while...
But what about me?
I'm
innocent. It was an accident. Will no one believe me? I appeal to every woman who's ever shot her husband. I ask all of you...
Mannering, please, control yourself. You have an opportunity to give evidence later on.
Why can't I give it now?
Yes, your lordship, why can't you? It's not fair. You've got a down on her just because she's guilty.
Innocent.
Innocent.
I am innocent. Innocent.
All right, don't keep going on about it. Get into the box and tell them.
Gun, and there was a struggle. And he was shot in the melee. It was an accident, I swear. He was the kindest, sweetest husband a woman ever had.
Can you give us the name of this woman?
It was me.
Oh, I see. You shot Mrs. Me's husband as well.
Oh, no, no. I only shot one husband.
What?
My own husband. It was an accident, I swear.
Yes, you say it was an accident. Have you any witnesses?
I should have, your lordship. I gave Mr. Prendergast the money for them.
Don't give too much away, Mrs. M. My lad, I asked permission to put the witnesses for the defense in after lunch.
But Mr. Prendergast, this is the first I've heard of any defense witnesses.
Well, I only thought of it this morning.
Very well, court adjourned at 2 o'clock.
Mr. Whittaker, are you sure this is going to work?
Mr. Prendergast assures me he's done it before and he's never been recognized yet. Oh, I think they're ready now.
Silence is God.
My lad, for my first witness I call Sean O'Halloran, an Irish labourer. Take the stand, please. Your name is Sean O'Halloran?
Sean, begar it is, bejabers. Indeed to goodness.
Indeed to goodness?
Oh, I'm sorry, that's the next witness. Begar, your honor. I saw the lady shoot her old man, and 'twas an accident. It was begar, bejabers, whatever.
Thank you, you may stand down. I call the next witness, Mr. Morgan Evans of Tony Pandy. A red-haired gentleman.
No, the red wig didn't turn up.
I beg your pardon, your lordship. The red wig didn't turn up. A balding gentleman. Your name is Morgan Evans?
Indeed, to goodness, there is right you are. Saw the lady shoot her husband, I did. An accidental like it was. Now back to Wales go I must. We'll keep a welcome in the valley. Whatever.
There you are. I don't wish to know that. There you are, members of the jury. We have had two witnesses of unimpeachable integrity. They have vouched for Mrs. Mannering. Look at her, gentlemen. Think of her plight. Alone, desperate, penniless.
Penniless? I'm a very rich woman.
You haven't had our bill yet. Gentlemen, for our final and conclusive witness, may I bring you someone whose word cannot be doubted, from Yorkshire, twin sisters.
Hey, what?
One of them whom hasn't turned up. So here's the other, Mrs. Alistair McTavish.
From Yorkshire?
Well, I can't do Scottish.
There was no doubt that these surprise witnesses for the defense swayed the tide of the whole case. From that moment on, the verdict was never in doubt for a minute.
What is your verdict, gentlemen?
Guilty.
Oh, dear.
Oh, it's not possible. Oh, no. Mr. Pendergast, they found me guilty. What are you going to do?
There's only one thing I can do now, madam.
Oh, what?